T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track 4 games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
So what happens after we die? Is that it? Lights out? Game over? What comes next? There comes a point where science has no answers. About 5% of the population has had an experience that seems to fall outside of anything science can explain. They die, their hearts stop for a few minutes, and they experience something otherworldly before returning to their bodies forever changed. Dr. Bruce Grayson is a psychiatry and neurobehavioral sciences professor at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. He's published hundreds of academic papers, co-founded the International Association for Near-Death Studies. His search for answers is chronicled in a new book released today, titled After: A Doctor Explores What Near-Death Experiences Reveal About Life and Beyond. Dr. Grayson, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you, Paul. I'm glad to be here with you.
Well, I feel like a groupie, like a fanboy. I've been following your work. This fascinates me on many levels because I've been tracking near-death experiences for decades now. And I'm always amazed that the people, when they die and then come back, they all pretty much say the same thing. They have similar stories. I'm just curious, what got you off the dime to study near-death experiences?
Well, I was raised as a materialistic scientist in a scientific household. We never talked in my family about anything non-physical or spiritual. We assumed when you die, that was the end of it. And I went through college and medical school like that, and then shortly after medical school, I was in my psychiatric training, and I started meeting patients who described being dead, having been declared dead, and then being revived, and having these near-death experiences in which they encountered deceased loved ones and saw what they thought was a deity and were in some other realm. And I dismissed them right away as being part of their mental illness until they started accumulating. And several years later, in 1975, Raymond Moody wrote a book called Life After Life, in which he gave this a name, the near-death experience, and described what these patients were telling him. And I recognized this was not just one or two of my patients talking about these things. It was part of a huge phenomenon that thousands of people, now we know millions of people all over the world, are reporting consistently.
Well, no, I'm amazed by this and the continuity of what they describe. And I know some people chalk it up to hallucinations, or maybe it's the drugs they're experiencing. But there seems to be some common threads, some common themes that people report. Can you talk about that a little more? What do people report after they are clinically, physically dead?
Sure, Paul. These experiences have been reported from the ancient world. We have writings from ancient Greece and Roman Egypt that describe the same type of experience we recognize today. And today we see them all over the world from different cultures, different religions, describing the same thing. People describe leaving their physical bodies, going through some tunnel into a different realm that seems to be pervaded with light. They see a being of light. They say it's a living being that radiates warmth and love and acceptance. They may review their entire lives, and they may then encounter other beings, some of which they recognize as deceased loved ones. And at some point, they make a decision to return to life, or they're told to come back. sometimes against their will. And they come back totally changed. And this, to me, as a psychiatrist, was the most interesting part of the experience, that they are not the same when they come back. They are much more spiritual, much more interested in being compassionate, being caring, being altruistic. They are much less interested in material things, in material possessions, in power, prestige, fame, competition. And it seems to them that getting ahead at someone else's expense just makes no sense anymore.
That's fascinating. So most people report an overwhelmingly positive experience. And I noticed some of the write-ups of your book, the people that you've interviewed, and what, hundreds, thousands of them, they no longer seem to fear death, most of them. Is that really
That's
the case?
Right. That is. That's the most common after effect of a near-death experience. No matter what they describe as what happened after they died, they come back no longer afraid of it. And now when I first heard that as a psychiatrist, I started worrying, is that going to make people more suicidal when they hear about this? Mm-hmm. Because some people who are thinking about ending their lives are deterred by that, by a fear of what might happen if they did so. And I thought, if they think that they're not going to be punished, if there's something waiting for them that's even better than this life, is that going to make them more suicidal? So, of course, being a scientist, I did a study of this. And I studied patients who were admitted to my hospital after a suicide attempt. And what I found was that those who had a near-death experience as a result of the suicide attempt were far less suicidal afterwards than those who didn't have a near-death experience. Now, this was paradoxical to me. So, of course, I asked them, why are you no longer suicidal? And what they said was that if you're no longer afraid of death, you're no longer afraid of life either. You're not afraid of living to the fullest, maybe taking risks, because you're not afraid of losing things here, because you know there's nothing to be feared if you do die. And that makes them much less frightened of everything. They feel that there's now a meaning and a purpose to everything they do, including their own suffering. So the problems that caused them to become suicidal before are now no longer something to be run away from, but something to be learned from.
That's remarkable. Again, the name of this book that's out today is called After: A Doctor Explores What Near-Death Experiences Reveal About Life and Beyond. And I know as a scientist, you had control groups. I know you looked at all of the other possible explanations. What do you say to skeptics who say, well, it's drugs, it's mass hallucination, maybe we're pre-programmed genetically to experience this, to make death somehow easier to manage, to take? What do you say to those folks?
Right, well, I sympathize with that because that's the way I started out. I was a diehard materialist, and I thought these were just ridiculous ideas. I was convinced over the decades that I've been doing this work that there are some real experiences here that we just can't sweep under the rug. You know, they are often called hallucinations, and yet they often report things when they are apparently out of the body that are totally unexpected, but they perceive accurately. And we can't explain those away as hallucinations. Hallucinations don't include accurate perceptions. And yet these people often report highly unusual, unexpected things, and they turn out to be corroborated by other people around in the room, like surgeons.
Right. Where they're describing the procedure, they're literally floating above their bodies, looking down at themselves and the doctors huddled around them, describing specific things that there's just absolutely no way they would know if they weren't somehow removed from their bodies. That's the part that baffles me.
Exactly. They report things the doctors were saying, mistakes the doctors made, things that you wouldn't have expected, including unusual things like a nurse having mismatched shoelaces. Again,
really?
There's just no way we can explain this if you assume that they were still in their bodies hallucinating.
This, again, I'm fascinated by this, and I sure appreciate your willingness to hang on one more segment. We have some questions, some additional questions, some from listeners, some from me. If you have a question for Dr. Bruce Grayson, his research into near-death experiences, and his new book, After, A Doctor Explores What Near-Death Experiences Reveal About Life and Beyond. Feel free to text us your question, 651-989-9226. We'll be back more with Dr. Grayson next. Dr. Bruce Grayson studies near-death experiences, and he's been doing this for a long time. He has a new book out today called After, A Doctor Explores What Near-Death Experiences Reveal About Life and Beyond. Doctor, welcome back to the show. Thanks for hanging in there with me.
My pleasure, Paul.
Some questions, some good questions coming in right now. I have some, and I'm also including, obviously, our listener questions. I'm curious, your research, first of all, how many people have you examined? Is it hundreds? Is it thousands? And are NDEs, these near-death experiences, universal? In other words, doesn't matter your age, your sex, your race, or the cause of death?
Yeah, well, I've included in my rigorous research a little more than 1,000 experiencers, but I've talked to many more than that that I don't include in my research because I don't have enough information about their experience. But there do seem to be consistencies across race, gender, age, religion, religiosity, culture. We don't know of anything that will predict whether you're going to have a near-death experience when you come close to death, or what kind you're going to have.
Interesting. You talked about some of these people who have passed, even if it's just a few minutes, being able to look down on their bodies as doctors work on them and describe in intricate detail things they couldn't possibly have known. You mentioned the shoelaces on, yes, on one of the attending nurses. One of our listeners says, I'm a first responder, and I've been to a few calls where an individual is in cardiac arrest but is successfully resuscitated. Have any of the folks described watching police officers, EMTs, and paramedics working on them?
That's a great question. The answer is yes, definitely. I've had people describe in great detail in a rescue squad vehicle leaving their bodies and watching the paramedics working on them, resuscitating them. One person actually left the rescue squad vehicle and was hovering above it. And accurately knew the number that was painted on the roof of the rescue vehicle. So they have sometimes reported things that the rescue squad personnel did, the EMTs were doing, that were maybe not part of the protocol. And later the EMTs corroborated, yes, these things were accurate.
Interesting. Another listener asked this question. How do you address the criticism of those who say the reason so many near-death experiences are shared and have so many similar details is because the stories have been told so many times and people are simply repeating details that they've already heard? How would you address that?
That's a great question. We have a model of the near-death experience that came from Raymond Moody's book in 1975, Life After Life. Before that, we didn't have the name near-death experience, and we didn't have a description of it in our literature. It's certainly not what our religions tell us is going to happen after we die. So actually, at the University of Virginia where I work, we have been collecting cases of this type long before 1975. Of course, we weren't calling them near-death experiences, but we were collecting these cases that we were calling at the time out-of-body experiences or deathbed visions. And I collected 24 of the ones that we had the most information about and compared them with 24 cases we've collected in recent years, matched by age, gender, race, religion, religiosity, how they came close to death, and how close they came to death. And we found that there was absolutely no difference in what they reported before the book came out telling us what NDEs were like and now, when people know what it is like. We also have evidence that people in other cultures who have not been exposed to the information that we have about near-death experiences report the same thing. And finally, there's evidence that young children, sometimes preschool children, who obviously haven't been taught about near-death experiences, report the identical thing that adults do.
Wow. Look, I believe that science has many answers. It doesn't have all the answers. Could this, in your humble opinion, and maybe this transcends what science can actually prove or disprove, but do you think this could be evidence that, that people do in fact have souls, something that might live on after death?
Well, the evidence strongly suggests to me, number one, that whatever part of us thinks and feels and perceives can keep functioning when the brain is not functioning. If you want to call that a soul, that's fine, but that word carries a lot of baggage with it. But whatever it is, the mind, the spirit, seems to be able to function without the brain. And if that's true, then that implies that it can, might be able to function after the brain has died, after our bodies have died. And in fact, some of the people who have had near-death experiences report encountering deceased people who were not known at the time to have died. So this can't be dismissed as expectation. They see people who died just shortly before their near-death experience, and no one had been told yet that they had passed. So that becomes hard to explain away as just hallucination or expectation. Now, I should say again that that's the way the evidence looks to me at this point. However, being a scientist, I don't take this as proof. I think that is, if I had to judge what the evidence says now, I would say the evidence points to us having some non-physical part of us that can survive without the body. And yet, I know that science is progressing day by day, and I have no idea what's going to happen in 50, 100 years. And we may find eventually some more mainstream medical explanation that can explain all this. But at this point, I can't imagine what it would be. All the obvious things we've looked at, the metabolic issues, oxygen deprivation, drugs people are given, electrical activity in the brain, when you look at the data, those hypotheses are disproved by the data. So we don't have an explanation at this point. That doesn't mean we'll never find one. But, you know, that's sort of an unprovable question. Can we ever find it? Well, it's possible in the future, but you can also say that there is some part of us that survives without the brain.
Dr. Grayson, I'm curious. I have to ask this question. I'm a person of faith. I acknowledge science, but I believe in something beyond science. And as a Christian, I come to Christ through faith. And when people say, well, it's blind faith, I go, no, it's not blind faith. There's plenty of evidence if you take the time to actually look and read and discover. And I guess where my brain goes, I think our time on this planet is basically purgatory. We get glimpses of hell, we get glimpses of heaven. But I'm curious, how has your scientific journey and your research and writing this book, how has this affected your outlook? Are you a person of faith or are you agnostic?
Well, I'm a person of science, basically. So I can't say that I have blind faith in anything. But when I look at the data strongly suggests that there is something out there that is all-loving, all-knowing that we encounter when we leave our bodies and come close to death or are pronounced dead. And that that being, whatever it is, loves us and wants us to be safe. And this world, near-death experiences say almost exclusively that this world is not the important part of us. That what leaves us, what leaves this physical body and goes to the other world is the important part of who we are and what we are. Now, when people talk about leaving their bodies and seeing things going on around the body, I can verify those. And those are things that science can address. When they talk about what happens in the other world with a god or deceased loved ones, that's much harder for science to address.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that the scientific method has some limitations when we get to that stage. But your book is fascinating, and I appreciate you bringing this to the public and coming on the show with us. Again, the name of the book, Dr. Bruce Grayson's book, is After: A Doctor Explores What Near-Death Experiences Reveal About Life and Beyond. And we'll certainly turn this into a podcast and make this available to people if you want to pass this on to somebody. I personally find it comforting, you know, just as a human being, that this may not be all there is, that this may be one act of a much longer play. Dr. Grayson, thank you for joining us today on CCO.
Well, thank you, Paul. Thank you.
Wish you the very best, sir. Thank you.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.